Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. This is Carl from Incredibly Strange Films and Deviant Legion, and we are celebrating Black History Month. And with me today is a very good friend of the podcast, Robert J. Walker. Robert, say hello and tell us a little bit about yourself.
Hello, everyone. This is Robert Walker. I'm a filmmaker, actor, and I love film, of course. And so I created my first film, and it's called Sketchy, and I'm a friend of Carl. So thank you for having me.
Oh, absolutely. Glad to have you back on the podcast, Robert.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome, man. You're welcome. So today we're going to focus in on Black film directors, particularly African-American film directors. And there's quite a history there. So before we get in talking about specifics, I just wanted to mention a couple of things you might not be familiar with. One is the first Black film director is Oscar Micheaux. Are you familiar with that name, Robert?
No, Oscar, what? What is his name?
Micheaux,
Oscar.
And it's M-I-C-H-E-A-U. He was French Caribbean director who emigrated to the U.S. in the 1900s. In the 1920s, had his own studio and directed several Black themed films, what they used to call race films. And he did several silents. He was, active until like the 1940s. But unfortunately, I've never seen any of his films. But he does have the moniker of the first African-American film director. So for history's sake, I wanted to mention him very briefly. But yeah, you should check him out. You should definitely check him out.
Well, I'm looking at one of his films that he made. It's called The Homesteader.
Mm-hmm.
The Homesteader in 1919.
Right.
And yeah, it's pretty interesting. He did other movies called Birthright, God's Stepchildren. I'm just looking him up as you were talking about him. So this will be very interesting to see and to study it for him. Yeah, thank you for giving me that information.
Oh, no problem at all. The one nice thing about Oscar Micheaux, and if you take a look at the period of time, all his films were all Black cast. Generally, he might have one or two Caucasians in it, but also the people that worked behind the scenes were all Black. He specifically designed his films, as I said, they were called race films, for an African-American audience. And he was very successful.
I didn't even know this. I'm glad you mentioned that. Being a filmmaker today, I think I'm glad you brought this to awareness, because this needs to be spread out to the masses, because I think a lot of filmmakers who are African-American probably don't know about them.
Exactly.
Like myself, so.
It's always good to look back at the history, because you'll always be surprised. Now, talking about being surprised, Cameron is with us. Cameron,
oh, hi, Cameron.
Are you there, Cameron?
I am. Apologies for connection issue.
Oh, okay, that happens with Blog Talk. I apologize about that. But Cameron, we have Cameron Sullivan, who is a fellow podcaster with us today. Cameron, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Hey, Cam.
Studied film at UTA and just fell in love with just atypical kind of movies, and just how it's not an easy spectrum to sum up. You know, it's more complex than people who love, video games and and everything. Film is just so changing. There's so many different audiences, and you never get any consistency with any fan base. Thank you for the opportunity, though.
Oh, absolutely. And you're also a fellow podcaster. I've been on your show, so we're glad to have you on ours, and we'll give you a chance
you
at the end
it.
Of the at the end of the podcast to do a little bit of promoting for yourself. So I have a question for the two of you.
Okay.
What was the first African-American film or black film that you saw? And why did it have, you know, why did it resonate with you? We'll start with Cameron first.
What was the first? So, film that had like a giant ensemble and everything. And mixed or black actors in them. But I would like to say probably I started with like simple Disney ones like Huck Finn and everything. But then I got into just like some very deeper ones like by Spike Lee and crime dramas by Clark Johnson. Who's still working today doing stuff like Your Honor and other shows inspired by the Homicide and the Shield format. But yeah, I mean, the first real big one I probably Spike Lee or Antoine Fuqua.
Okay, and we'll definitely talk about those two directors. How? Pardon me. How about you, Robert? What was the first black film that you encountered?
I would say it would be Sidney Poitier. And the first film I saw of his was, yes, it was Coming to Dinner, I'm familiar with. I'm trying to remember way back in the past, Raising in the Sun, like when my mom watched television shows as far as that, not television shows or movies, as far as the movies are concerned, was definitely a Sidney Poitier film, and it was pretty amazing to see a black actor being just as, especially in black and white film, an old film like that, you know, remembering films like that and other films like, I'm trying to think, of course, Spike Lee. As far as School Days, his film called School Days, that was one of the first films. I'm trying to think the first black film. I think it would have to be Sidney Poitier's film. So it would be like Guess Who's Coming to Dinner, stuff like that.
That's good for me. So in the early 70s, we moved to a small town in northwestern Pennsylvania, and luckily we were a test market for both the movie channel and HBO, and that's where I saw my first, what they called at the time, blaxploitation films. And I can tell you the movie, maybe not the first movie I ever saw, but I can tell you the movie that absolutely just got me into blaxploitation, and that was Coffee. And, of course, that had to do with Pam Grier.
Oh, yeah, Coffee, that's classic, yeah.
You know, and of course, then there's Shaft and Superfly.
Right.
And of course, you start to talk about Gordon Parks and so on and so forth. So what I thought we would do is just go around the round table here and pick out a director that you want to talk about. And I'll start with you, Robert. So is there a black director that you want to discuss and talk about his films?
One of my new favorites now as film director, I mean, of course you have Spike Lee, Tyler Perry, and you know, you have your Lee Daniels, and, you know. But one of the new ones that I'm talking about now is Regina King. Unfortunately, her son committed suicide recently, but Regina King is kind of a new favorite of mine now that I kind of wanted to talk about, especially, and plus she's a female, an African-American female director. And I know she's been an actor for many, many years. And started out on a television show called 227 when she was a young girl. But she grew into the industry and became a great actress. And now she's this amazing director as well as a great actress. And I started to notice her in The Watchmen. Her talent, she always is a great talent, but I think I really began to notice her on the television series Watchmen from the movie and the DC comic, movie adaptation. But it turned into a series on the HBO Max, and she was a big part of that. I saw the creativity and the imagination. The series was, to me, genius. And so I started to look at her more as more than an actress, and I started to see her as a storyteller. Then she started directing a lot of films and a lot of things. And One Night in Miami she created in 2020, and it was up for awards and everything. And so I thought, like, wow, she's becoming a great director. And she's becoming, in her own right, if she keeps going, she'll be in history one of the great African-American directors of our time. So I think Regina King is something to look at, and we think we have to look closer. But unfortunately, her child committed suicide, about a month ago. So I hope that doesn't, stop her growth as she goes along. So she's like up there with my favorite directors, but, just besides being black, but just being one of my favorite directors, like it's her, Spike Lee, Zack Snyder, and, many others that are up there. She's in that lineup for me. My favorite.
Yeah, she has a new movie in pre-production called Bitter Root. Unfortunately,
yes.
I've never seen One Night in Miami, so I need to do that. So I'll definitely
check
her out.
It's pretty interesting. Like I like her writing, her perspective, her outlook on the story, and it was written, and it's become. I think I see some strong potential of great directions and artistry from her. So
good.
Of course
good.
I could talk about Spike Lee and the others and stuff like that.
And I'm sure we'll mention them. Absolutely. So I'm going to move on to Cameron.
That's a very good pick you had with her. Cause she, the best actors make good filmmakers. So kind of thinking around the same.
So Cameron,
go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say, so Cameron, go ahead and pick a director.
So I thought of various other people like John Ridley and even Mario Van Peebles. But, I decided to go with Vondi Curtis Hall, who
okay.
in a bunch of different movies. He and his actress wife, Casey Lemon, have done a bunch of various movies. And anytime they show up, you just know that, Vondi, he's been in so many different movies, Die Hard 2 and Daredevil.
Right.
And, Casey, she's been in a bunch of things like Brothers movies as well as Candyman. And whenever either of them do a movie, it's just very dedicated, just very straightforward and dramatically rewarding. And I think anyone will be a little too self-indulgent or risk coming off as that. And they're both just great at just not being preachy and just having good performances, no matter their talent. had they had a few duds, yeah, but, you know, it's part of the business. But I think they both deserve some kind of special mention as just being reliable day players.
Well, absolutely. And as a director, I just want to point out, Vondi has done a lot of TV, but he also did Gridlocked, which I like very, very much. That was his first full-length film in 1997.
Right. He was interviewed in a Vibe magazine about the making of that, saying how Tupac was a character, you know, in and of himself, but when cameras were rolling, you know, his own, he
absolutely
was here to play. He wanted to get out of the whole, you know, gangster rap scene if he could, but that's, you know, that's just where he was at that point in his career.
Mm-hmm. Well, it seems that a lot of directors, and generally a lot of directors, not depending on race, come from being an actor. And I want to talk about one of my favorites. Okay? And that would be Bill Duke. Bill Duke. Okay, so I hear reaction from you guys. So what do you think of Bill Duke?
Very good pick.
I think Bill Duke is incredible. Like, I when I first saw Bill Duke, I saw him in the film Car Wash. And
that was
his
first acting role. That was his first acting
role. He was so intense. I remember as a kid, because my mom was watching it, I remember as a kid, I was so scared. You know, it was like so, it was old back then when I saw it. But it was, he was so intense, and he had such a unique look. And the way his acting is very intense. Like, I love actors that are intense, and he's a great actor. He is. And for me to know that he, you know, directed films, known for films like Predator and Commando and all that other stuff. He worked closely a lot with, what's his name, Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Right.
And so, but yeah, I think he's, that's pretty fascinating, brought him up. Yeah, he's a very interesting person.
Well, one of the things I want to talk about Bill Duke is probably one of the best films that most people don't even know. And I'm wondering if the two of you know it, is Deep Cover.
Yes.
Cover.
Excellent narc film.
Called Deep Cover?
It's called Deep Cover.
Blow,
and he directed it. And it's a, I won't, it's not a, it is a black themed film, but it's not black exploitation. It came out in 92. And it's, Lawrence Fishburne plays an undercover cop that is controlled by, let me get his name.
Jeff
the guy
Goldblum.
From, not Jeff Goldblum, who he hooks up with. The guy from Toad from American Graffiti. I can't think of his name. Okay, but anyway, he hooks up with him, and it's a scene at the beginning that will just blow you away. And I won't give it anything more than that, but the film is just so good. It's just so amazing. Go ahead, Cameron. I'm sorry.
No, all good. And then they reunite years later for the Bumpy Johnson biopic, Hoodlum.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
He apparently said, I remember in a television archive interview, that he was influenced by Samuel Fuller.
Mm-hmm. Very much so, because he was an actor on A Dead Pigeon on Beethoven Street, which was a film that Sam Fuller did in France near the end of his career. He worked with Fuller. There's a great story that Bill Duke, Sam Fuller is is filming something from under a table. And he's filming Bill Duke. Mm-hmm. And Bill Duke says to him, you know, whose point of view is that? And Sam Fuller goes, it's my goddamn point of view, you fuck. That was Sam Fuller.
Oh, my God.
But talking about Bill Duke as an actor, too, I just have to – one of my favorite films of all time, particularly in the late 90s, is The Limey by Steven Soderbergh. And Terrence Stamp is one of the great British actors, and he's the main character. He's pulled in by the DEA, and there's Bill Duke just sitting in this chair, and Terrence Stamp is in front of him. Terrence Stamp goes into this big, big monologue, and it is beautiful. It's beautiful. And Bill Duke steals the whole scene with this line. Says, there's just one thing I don't understand. Every motherfucking word coming out of your mouth.
You're right. Ballsy movie.
Yeah, he's very...
It's beautiful. He literally steals the scene from Terrence Stamp. Terrence Stamp is acting his ass off. And he steals the scene. And also, someone else in Deep Cover I got to mention is Clarence Williams III, who's just magnificent in that movie.
Yeah.
Magnificent.
Well, I could bet.
So anyway, Bill Duke is someone you really need to check out. As we said, Hoodlum, also A Rage in Harlem, he did. And he's doing specifically TV now. But he now has in pre-production an untitled Joe Louis film that he's doing. So that's really good.
Oh, really?
Yes. Now, he also has a sister act, too. You know, so, I mean, he's done a lot. So Robert, we're back to you. So who do you want to talk about?
Well, I think another director is Lee Daniels.
I actually
met him a couple of times.
Really?
Yeah, very interesting. And I met him because they had a movie opening of his first film, which was called the one with Monster. Monster's Ball.
Monster.
And I was invited with a friend of mine to come to the guy whose first directed film opening, and invited to go to Tribeca at the Tribeca Hotel, I think it was in. And I didn't, you know, he was an unknown, you know, director. Nobody knew. This was his first film that he was, like, doing, you know, his, not opening, but pre-screening. And we saw the film, and I actually met the guy beforehand. And then I was all these celebrities, but they wanted this group of black guys to see this film. And so I saw Monster's Ball when it first came out, and I thought, wow, this is pretty good. This is amazing and stuff. So, and I love the direction. Halle Berry, of course, was the first African-American woman to win the Oscar for this role that she was in. And this guy, he was just starting out, and he was, like, looking to look more to make more films. And then we know about Precious, which is, you know, that's the worldwide hit, I think, that helped him put him on the map in directing, and that's how he grew from there. And just to know his background and where he came from to where he is now is pretty amazing. Mm-hmm. And the rawness of his storytelling. Right now it's kind of muted down to me. I don't like his directing as much as I like his original introduction of directing. because I think it's got more a little commercial or more, you know, it looks like it doesn't have the imagination it did when he first started. But when he first started, he really impressed me with Monsters Ball and his first few films that he directed. And Precious, of course, is like an amazing film in that way. And I love the rawness and the artistry, and just his different outlook was just so unique and just edgy and just unrelenting braveness and boldness with what he did with film during that time. So, I mean, have you guys seen Precious or Monsters Ball?
Yes.
Oh, absolutely. Both.
I'm kind of with you.
I'm also thinking.
He pretty much is like Ryan Coogler, where, you know, it was very interesting when he was on the indie scene, and then, you know, when he started doing more mainstream, not as interesting, but yet at the time, kind of
right.
What he can do.
Yeah. Right, right. I wish he would go back to that rawness he had before.
Yeah.
Well, I hate to disappoint you. Okay, now I got to first say I'm also a fan of The Paperboy, which many people don't like, but
too.
I do.
I love The
But
Paperboy.
I hate to disappoint you. You might want to, hold on to your chair here for a second. He's been announced as the director of the reboot of Terms of Endearment.
Really?
And I'm not joking. Really.
Really?
Yeah, really. I'm not joking. They might be. Now,
really?
I don't. They haven't really cast it yet. It is announced. My guess will be that it is a reboot with a black cast. I don't know that for sure, but that would be my guess. But yes, he has been announced as director of the reboot of Terms of Endearment.
That was just recently he was announced, or
That's very recently. Very recently, late 2021. I think it was November or December that was announced.
This would be very interesting to see what his take is. Wow.
Yeah.
What do you think of it?
It did a number on me too, guys. Trust me.
What do you think of that? What is your opinion of that? I don't know how.
Let me put it this way. I can't stand Terms of Endearment to begin with. So I'm going to basically just avoid it. But that's me. That's me.
Well, hopefully makes enough money for him to make a movie that everyone wants to see.
Exactly.
Right.
So, or nobody, I don't know. So Cameron, let's get back to you, and who do you want to talk about?
Oh, man. Well, I mentioned Ryan Coogler earlier. Are either of you a fan of Fruitvale Station?
Who? Yes, I am, actually. Good, solid film.
Who is this?
Right.
Who are you talking to?
Ryan Coogler.
Okay, Kurt? Oh, Ryan Coogler, yeah, of course, yeah. Ryan Coogler?
Yeah.
No, yeah, of course. Black Panther? Yes. What about Ryan Coogler?
He's just very good at getting just authentic, thrilling performances. I don't think he's the best at necessarily creating thrills, but he's really good at just mainly just making sure everyone is speaking their own truth.
Oh, okay. Telling their story. He's good at that, like telling a story. And yeah, like I find Ryan Coogler, he's very competent, of course, as a director. You know, like, I think he does the job well. Like, he did Black Panther well. Like, anything the Black Panther was done well, and I think he's going to grow into even more of an amazing director. What the thing I like about directors is something, a style, something new to the table that I'm really not that familiar with. I think with Ryan Coogler, he gives you good at what is already established. If you understand what I'm saying, I can't.
You know what I say on that is and I don't mean this as a cut, because a lot of people call this a cut, but his work is workmanlike. Gets the job done.
Right.
He's very, very dependable. And he's what I would call a not a wandering director, but, you know, he takes whatever's given to him and does the best he can with it. And that's why I like to say workmanlike. Right?
But he barely got his first feature done, so he knew about time and effort and making every shot count.
Do you think he has a certain style that's distinctive, or what do you think?
Besides
having a black cast.
Well, yeah, his style is mainly do a lot of montages and establish everything the character wants in the first 10 minutes instead of a overblown, you know, origin story or what have you, and then, like you say, you know, just progress very naturally into a very problematic, you know, and sometimes perilous journey. And I mean, Creed, he did good also at, you know, once again, I want to see what he can also do outside of franchises now that he's made all that money and become better.
Right. I think what I would like to see more of is a distinctive style. Like you know how, like, when Spike Lee came aboard, he had a definite style, like, to me. Like, his first film, She's Gotta Have It, was just like something new, a new, you know what I mean? And also Regina King, she has a definite style. Like, if you see it, there's a style that's definite. You know, like, I'm trying to think of that director who has an amazing style. He did, Looks Could Kill, what's that old director? De Palma?
Brian De Palma?
Yeah, you know, he had a definite style. Like, if you see a film, it's like, oh, that's a Brian De Palma film. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? The split screens and stuff like that. And he had a definite style. I don't know if Ryan has a strong, definite style to say, oh, that's a Ryan Coogler film. Like, I know it's a competent good film, but I don't know yet as far as directing style. I don't know. But I think he's a great, competent director.
Oh, that's just it. He's one of those, he could probably work it up a notch a bit. But, right now he's pretty much all about get the heart and essence of the movie going versus worrying about other style choices. But, yeah, it would be cool to see him kind of work in a few signature moves, establish his own persona. Mm-hmm.
Oh, I don't want to sound like an a-hole. I don't. But yeah, that's my thing with him. I think he's a great director, and he gets the job done, and he's amazing in what he does. I think I would like to see more. Can I mention one called? Another one.
Absolutely, and then I'm going to talk about Spike Lee, and then go on from there because I got to go somewhere after that. But go ahead. What do you got?
Steve McQueen.
Steve
McQueen is?
Oh, absolutely.
Do you like his stuff? Yeah, I like Steve McQueen a lot. Like, I like his stuff. You know, he did Hunger, was one of his first films, and Shame and 12 Years a Slave. Like, I saw all of his films. Not all of his films, but, like, those were the ones. I think he's an amazing director that came out of the gate. with Hunger, and I love his intense style that he brings and emotes from the actors, and I think he does a great job of just bringing out the quality and just the intense need of what the movie needs to bring out. I think one of my fave films was, you know, 12 Years a Slave, and that's where you got Lupita Nyong'o. She got won an Oscar for her performance, and that's where it broke out there. He knows how to cast for roles for particular people and for actors that needs to fill in the role. And I think he's a great director. I think he's something that we should hear more of. And I would love to, you know what I would love to see him do? I would love to see him direct a superhero film myself. So it would be interesting to see what his take of what, because he brings out the character and the fallibilities and the humanity of the character of a movie script. And that's where I see his power lies. Like he shows the innard and bring it out of the character. I mean, what is your opinion of Steve McQueen?
He's solid.
Okay, I can go on here for a second. I think he's very, very competent. He's very good, but he's the type of director that I can respect, but I don't really like his films.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I mean, I'm the same way with Kubrick. Okay. I mean, I can, you know, there are certain films I like, but there's just something that just stops me from liking the films. I can appreciate them. I can certainly say they're good films. But let's face it, Shame, Hunger, 12 Years a Slave, they're tough films. They're tough films to get through, okay? And even Widows, which actually is my favorite of his. I really like Widows. I mean, he's a great director, but it's not something I really want to revisit. You understand?
It's like uncomfortable.
Uncomfortable that you don't like? Uncomfortable.
Oh, is it?
Fuck, man. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well,
how about you,
that's
Cameron?
What I like about it.
Yeah, I'm kind
what
of,
do you think?
His films, you know, like you say, they are dramatically well done and everything, but they're just such harsh subjects. They're not really on your instant rewatch list, but. Yeah, I think a lot of them have some interesting material that you'll still be thinking about for days. It isn't that one of those where it's like, yeah, I saw that years ago. Man, that is speechless.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. And I kind of like those kind of films for some reason.
Oh, I can understand that too. So I want to just get back very briefly to Spike Lee. We're not going to spend a lot of time on Spike Lee because...
We already know, yeah.
You know, I mean, if you don't know who Spike Lee is, you need to, okay? Who cares that he's black? He's one of the great American filmmakers of all time, period. I don't care about race. He's just incredible. But I do want to focus on one film he did. A film that's not as well known. And the reason I bring this film up is actually a remake of a film of a director I'm going to be talking about. And I'm wondering if either of you saw The Sweet Blood of Jesus.
You know, I never saw that.
Yes. Yeah, I saw it.
Okay, you both saw it, right?
I never saw it.
Okay, so Cameron, can you tell me what that film is a remake of?
God, it's been a while. It was based on a stage play, wasn't it?
No, it was based on a film. And if you take a look at the credits, Spike Lee credits the original writer of it, who also directed the film. The film I'm talking about is Ganja and Hess, and it was directed by Bill Gunn. And if you've never seen Ganja and Hess, you have to. It is necessary.
I just didn't get those elements. I didn't know it was a remake of that. I thought it was based on a stage play.
You said Sweet Blood of Jesus?
And it's called The Sweet Blood of Jesus. And that's D-A, not T-H-E. And that's a film he did a Kickstarter on. And it's done in a very, very... and he did it specifically for Bill Gunn. Now, let me talk a little bit about Bill Gunn. Bill Gunn was a writer first. And he wrote three films in a row that just absolutely blew me away. Now, this is back in my day. This is early 70s. He wrote a screenplay for Hal Ashby's The Landlord, which is about Beau Bridges taking over a ghetto and being the landlord of, and how he connects with the black inhabitants of it. Wonderful film. Wonderful film. Then he writes the same year, he writes a screenplay for The Angel Levine, which is, I freaking love this movie. Directed by Jan Kadar. It's Zero Mostel as a older Jewish man. His wife is dying. And all of a sudden, Harry Belafonte shows up at his door saying he's an angel, and he's the Angel Levine, and all he has to do is believe in him, that he's an angel. And it is magnificent. It really is. But then he was given the chance to direct a blaxploitation film. And they were expecting, and they wanted a horror movie. So they were expecting something like Blackula. And I'm going to tell you that Ganja and Hess ain't anywhere near Blackula.
You're right.
Not even close. They try, you know, so he gives them this film, which is really about addiction. And it's addiction not only to blood, but also to religion, to wealth, to sex. It is an amazing film. Robert, if you've never seen this, you need to see this.
God, I got to check it out.
Yeah. It is a brilliant film. And the reason, again, that I mentioned Spike Lee is that Spike Lee remade this film as The Sweet Blood of Jesus, and it's maybe a half step down from the original. They're both really, really good. In fact, The Sweet Blood of Jesus came that a year that was released was in my top 10 films. I just, you know, of course, I'm predilected to like it because I love Ganja and Hess so much. And and Spike Lee was very, very respectful of the original. Now, the thing about Bill Gunn, he also did some other films. Only two other films. And one is called Stop, which I've never seen, but Personal Problems was lost and was just found a couple years ago. Unfortunately, I was not able to go to the premiere of it in New York City. That's a film that I still need to see. So basically, the only film that Bill Gunn ever did that I've seen is Ganja and Hess. And it's absolutely brilliant. Now, just to let you know about Personal, there's nobody in there that you would know. But I hear it's very, very good. So, you know, but I'll tell you what, as a writer, that man could write a script. No doubt.
Oh, Bill Gunn?
Bill Gunn.
Hmm.
Bill Gunn.
Yeah, I'm gonna look him up. And thank you for, like, I know the last thing he did was some of the Cosby Show. That's what I'm seeing right now. This last
as an actor,
right?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, so I got to study up on him as well.
Yeah, but that's someone that I definitely recommend. So we're back to you, Robert. Who do you got? Two more rounds?
Okay, for me, another one. Hold up. I'm going to say, it's so many. What's her name? Ava DuVernay. She's pretty good, too. It's a female. You're Ava DuVernay? Yeah. I noticed her work that she did with, what was that HBO series?
When They See Us for Netflix?
Yes, for Netflix. I forgot what it was, but the name of it, not what it is. Yeah.
Central Park 5.
Yeah, Central Park 5. I couldn't think of the name. I didn't really notice her before, and then I, you know, heard about Central Park 5, and then so I started to look into what she's doing and things like that. So, and I found out she did Selma, and that was just another one that I found out that she did. And as far as me checking in on her, and I saw Selma, which was she was basically a producer of it, but it's also she also produced is becoming like big with other things that's coming up. Like I'm looking up her now is she's doing a series called Naomi with the DC Comics adaptation series. It's on I forget what it's on, CW, and it's called Naomi, and it's CW, and it's about a superheroine who's African-American. She's very pro-black as well, you know, as most other directors that are African-American. And she's been a name to be reckoned with in the industry. She had the chance before Coogler to direct, they considered her for directing the Black Panther first, and she actually turned it down. And of course, that's how we got Ryan Coogler to do the Black Panther. So I think she makes some weird choices. Not weird, but I think she missed some good choices to get to show her director's debut. But I think she's someone that it could potentially be one of in my top list of directors to look at. I just think she needs the right project to show her ability to shine. The Central Park 5 was, like, she can do great documentary, but as far as narratives are concerned, I think she just needs to find the right project to show her ability. If you get what
well,
I'm saying.
I'm going to interrupt here for just a second because her ability, I think, is being shown as a producer. She's doing much more producing these days than she is directed. And I just want to bring out that she's in pre-production of a series called Wings of Fire. She's got DMC that is filming right now that she's and these are Netflix and HBO things. Naomi, you mentioned, which was just released. She did Queen Sugar as an executive producer, 74 episodes. Colin in Black and White. and Home Sweet Home, which was a TV series that she executive produced. So she, and that's all in the last 2 years.
Right.
That's in the last 2 years. Okay. And so, you know, I think where she's going is producing, which is perfect. You know, that we have someone who is African-American that is focusing specifically on TV and miniseries of the Black experience. And that's what she's focusing on right now. So just
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I'm done. Go ahead.
Oh, okay. Yeah. She's doing it. Like, she directed A Wrinkle in Time, which she turned down the Black Panther for, and I think that was a kind of a wrong move.
In her defense, I will say nobody can do that book justice. There's no way that should have been put on film. I'm sorry. I read that when I was a kid. I think I was like 7 years old or 6 years old when I read that. Was blown away.
In
There's no way you can visualize that.
Well,
seriously.
Right.
In all fairness, she's admitted that she's kind of against the current Hollywood model, which is do Oscar bait movies or do superhero movies. She wants to do a story that happens.
Right.
So,
you're right.
So
those are the only things that
wouldn't have been a good fit for, you know, you got to love your genre, you know, so, you know, it's like,
right.
And I, in all fairness, I think she just wanted to do an easygoing kids movie. You know, I haven't seen it. I'm sure it's fine for what it is, but I'm not the audience particularly. So, but that's okay.
Right.
She wanted to do easy genre fare and then move on to, you know, cause again, you know, When They See Us is just on, compromising, just look at just how people can just totally be ruined by just being at the scene of a crime and just be instantly accused of wrongdoing. And
right. You're
so
right
tragic.
About that.
And
well, a lot of movies.
Well, but like you guys pointed out, there's just so many people who will do a movie, but again, it's not. It's just overhyped, or it's just not very enjoyable. And she knows how. She has it down to a T, much like Ryan and how, and even Spike, in terms of how to keep you engaged with a very gritty subject matter and let you know that
right.
so much thought went into constructing this narrative.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So Cameron, we're going to move on and get to you on this now. Who do you want to mention?
Well, here's another female. Black director. Have you guys heard of Dee Reyes?
No, I have not.
So
Dee Reyes?
Yes, she did the LGBTQ drama Pariah, as well as Mudbound for Netflix.
Okay,
I know
Mudbound.
She also did Bessie for HBO, starring Queen Latifah.
Oh, she did?
Yes.
Oh, I didn't know that.
She was on that same boat. I was aware of her at the same time Ava was just breaking on the scene. Like, that was one of the few times where, you know, I was always having heated discussions with my professors. They just seemed to want to just interrogate us with difficult, hard to get into movies. And that was one of the few times
mm-hmm.
where I actually thanked my professor, saying, you know what, Pariah was a pretty thoughtful, well-done movie. You know, I saw it on HBO Indie, I think it was. And I was just like,
mm-hmm.
this is just so well focused. Just the actors are bringing so much to their roles, but the script that's there, you know, was already based on a short film. And so the best thing you can do about a short that's getting well received is expand on it, you know, make it a 90-minute movie. And, you know, you'll watch it and you never will feel cheated or like, just predictable Hollywood crap. You know, it's just very,
right.
so strong. You know, a young woman, you know, is close to her dad, who's a cop, who is never really around, but will try to support her. She's closeted. Her mom is very homophobic and about to disown her. And she's just trying to think, what the fuck do I do with my life? You know, so it's got that John Cassavetes kind of feel where, you know, just a bunch of talented actors and filmmakers got together. And she apparently was an intern on Inside Man for Spike Lee. So, you know, she was going to, Dee Reyes was going to
so she
New York schools and just learning how to make a kind of movie that she wanted and on time, on budget, and well-focused. And Bessie was great, too, because, you know, HBO, they're always looking at independent filmmakers to helm their movies that they can buy and show on their station. And that was just a very well-thought-out, you know, drama, too, just with a lot of the same kind of themes of forbidden love and people trying to break through, realizing that stardom doesn't mean it erases all your inner demons and other crap going on in your personal life off stage. And, you know, Mudbound, let's put it together. You know, that was a well done script on a bunch of racial tension and, you know, post-World War II and based on actual
right.
events. And so I think she's just going to keep launching. She's going to always do that sleeper. She might as well be called the female African John Siles, you know. She's on it.
One thing I want to mention about this, I'm looking at her now, and particularly Pariah, which I do not know. So I got to watch this. But that film was partially supported by the Adrian Shelley Foundation. If you don't know who Adrian Shelley was, she was an actress and a director who did a film called Waitress, who was murdered. And
oh,
the
yeah, I
also
saw that documentary.
Bought by her widower, Andy Ostroy. And they gave money to make this film happen. So, you know, give them a definite on this.
That's a tragic story.
Yeah.
I'm glad she was able to make that with their help. But, God, that's sad.
Well, I tell you what, I'm going to definitely check out Dee Reese because I've never even heard of her before this. So I'm glad you brought her up. You know, and the other thing, I think it's really cool that the two of you are focusing on African-American women as directors.
Well,
that's fantastic.
Well,
yeah,
that they're progressive. It's that they're also, they just have their own original voice as opposed to
right.
you know, trying to capitalize on a bigger bandwagon or, like you say, do a pretentious trend that's been done to death. And just, you see the money on the wall versus the talent. And their talent just shows. It's just not hidden. It's in their blood.
Well, you know, while we're on the subject of African-American female directors, you really need to look at this young lady, Nina DaCosta.
Nina DaCosta.
Okay.
Absolutely.
And she did Candyman, the latest Candyman, the remake of Candyman that came out in 2021. Yeah, and that's like one of her first big films. And she was also the writer of that film, and it grossed so much. I think she was one of the biggest grossing female directors as far as box office in movie history. And so now she's working, and she's new. She's only have no more than like 7 credits to her name. And she's a producer, director, and writer. And now she's doing Marvel. She's working for Marvel right after Candyman. And she's working on a project for Marvel Studios. And it's called The Marvels. And so that's kind of like a secret thing that Marvel's coming out. So when you see it come out in when you see her working with the title of Captain Marvel and things, you'll see that let me see. I think that's what it says right here, that she's working on a Marvel project. Yeah, she's the director of Marvels, and it's post-production right now. And it's supposed to come out in November 2022. So I think we're going to see her name all over the place, and it's something to look for. She's also another film that she's producing or directing is a TV series. It's called The Lincoln Conspiracy, and that's to be announced. It just, you know, But this, I think she's going to be another young lady that we should look out for as well.
Absolutely. I finally got a chance to see Candyman, and I was impressed. I still like the original better, but this was a really good remake.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But I'm a horror nut anyway, so...
For
and
our
God,
first
I
film, I was
like, yeah.
You know, I thought it was really good. I mean, there's some things that could work here and there with the writing, I thought. But it was like her first attempt. It was like, okay, great. Like, not attempt, but her first produced film, and it's a kind of like a blockbuster now. And for her directing it and writing it, I thought it was... you know, there's something, it looks promising, something is very inspiring as a new director myself.
Yeah, I agree. I think she just needs some better material, but I mean, she's directed a few episodes of the British Netflix gangster show Top Boy, and she's also helmed a podcast series with John Boy, Bill Duke.
Okay, we're losing you a little bit, Cameron. So get to
the phone. Yeah, are you walking around?
Can you hear me? Can you hear me now?
Yeah, now we can
hear
you better.
Yeah, that's better.
Okay. Okay. So.
Okay. So.
She's done a few.
So I'm gonna hijack this, okay, guys, because we're running out of time. I'm gonna do two quick ones, then we'll do one more from each of you, okay?
Okay.
I want to talk about a director that many people don't realize that he's black, and it's because of the films he's done over the years. Are you familiar with the director Carl Franklin?
Yes.
I heard of that name before.
Yeah.
Okay, so Carl Franklin came into film in the early 90s. The first film he did was Full Fathom 5, but what he really did was he worked specifically in the 90s noir, and he gave us some of the best 90s noir of all time. One False Move.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but my favorite of his is Devil in a Blue Dress with Denzel.
Oh, I heard of that.
Okay, you need to see that. Okay, that's necessary. Seriously.
Devil in the Blue Dress.
Devil in the Blue Dress. Also, another film called One True Thing in the 90s. But Devil in the Blue Dress is one of his best. Also, he did a film, a biopic on Sam Cooke called Legend, which is very, very good. Okay, and also he is the new episodes that they're doing of Monster, the Jeffrey Dahmer story. He's directed a couple of those too. But Carl Franklin is someone you need to check out, and particularly Devil in the Blue Dress.
You know, he came from Roger Corman School, then burst onto the scene with those Denzel Washington thrillers, and now, you know, he's constantly directing just big, large-scale, almost every miniseries that's coming out. Likely he will help, you know, one to two episodes of it.
Also, I do want to mention that he started as an actor, and he's in one of the best blaxploitation family films of all time. And that's Five on the Black Hand Side. Five on the Black Hand Side. And if you have not seen that, you need to see that too.
No, I haven't seen that yet. Let me see. I got to check that one out. The Black Hand Side. And then what was another one? You say you had another?
Well, I said he started out as an actor. But the big one, of course, is Devil in a Blue Dress. Okay, and Full Fathom 5 is really good too. But
yeah,
that
I've heard of
Bella
Lugosi, but that's another story. Okay, I'm not familiar, so I'll definitely have to watch it.
Okay, so another one I need to talk about very briefly. Now, he started out as an actor, best known for his role in Hogan's Heroes. But
really?
Ivan Dixon directed two of the best blaxploitation films ever. Okay, and that would be Trouble Man. But the one that is an absolute, just incredible film is The Spook Who Sat by the Door. Now, do you know that film? Do you know what that film is about? It's based on a novel by Sam Greenlee. And it's set in the late 60s. And the CIA is pressured into hiring a black operative. So there are several that come in, and this gentleman goes through all this stuff to become a black operative in the CIA. And what do they have him do? Make copies and sit by the front door and welcome people. He's not exactly happy with that. So what does he do? He goes back to the ghetto and starts with his knowledge of what they've taught him, teaches sort of like the Black Panthers to fight against the man.
Oh, wow. Oh, wow.
This was a film that was so divisive that the FBI actually went in and grabbed the film itself from theaters.
Wow.
They didn't get Jones.
Oh, wow. And what era was this?
This was 1973. This was 1973.
Wow.
And just to let you know about him as an actor, too, I just want to let you know, he was in Porgy and Bess with Sidney Poitier, A Raisin in the Sun with Sidney Poitier, Two Late Blues. You know, and he was in several TV series in the early 60s. And he also starred in two of Twilight Zone. And The Big Tall Wish, he played the lead in an all-African-American cast on Twilight Zone.
Nice.
And this is Ivan Dixon. Okay.
This is Ivan Dixon.
Sweet. I'll look it up.
Okay.
Oh,
so,
wow.
So, guys, you got one more each. You got one more each. So we'll go to you, Cameron.
Okay.
You go ahead.
Okay. Building on your deal with Carl Franklin, have you guys heard of Thomas Carter?
I've heard the name.
Thomas.
I'm going to call IMDb him right now.
Okay. He's done so many TV shows, including the pilot for Miami Vice, various episodes of Hill Street Blues and a bunch of other hard-hitting crime shows. He did Metro with
Eddie Murphy. The White Shadow?
Yep, that was when he was an actor, and then he started directing, I think, a few episodes of it. And if you want to look at his archive of television interview, it's pretty cool how he had to tell bigots, you know, who were crew members to get over their, you know, differences and respect, you know, his position as a director. And
well, I really have to tell somebody this. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
they,
I can imagine.
Unfortunately, there were still some pricks left in Hollywood. But, yeah, he also just really just was pretty good at just always just greenlighting some movies for NBC or HBO to play. And
he directed American Gods, too. I didn't know that.
Yep. Yeah. You look at his resume, you'll see countless, you know, just giant samples of that. But yeah, he's pretty much gotten to where he's gotten just because, yeah, he's just really good at doing suspense and character driven stories.
You know, the two films that he did was Save the Last Dance, but the one film that I know that is excellent is Coach Carter.
Yes, he did that also. I think he used to be a coach, if I'm not mistaken, but I could be mistaken.
Absolutely. That's what I understand.
Nice.
I have to check him out. There's a lot of people, Thomas Carter. I mean, I saw things that I didn't know he directed, so I'm just
exactly.
I need to look more closely into he's a very prolific director, so I'll definitely stay up on him.
Coach okay, Carter, Robert,
and
one more.
Have you guys ever heard of Robert Townsend? Robert Townsend?
Absolutely.
Robert
I
Townsend?
Love Townsend. Absolutely.
Yeah, Townsend. Yeah, Townsend. I think my first film that I saw him in was The Five Heartbeats. And he was also the director and producer of those films, of that film. And also the Hollywood Shuffle is what I saw. And I was crying laughing because it was like one of the best comedic films I ever saw in my life. And still is one of them, is the Hollywood Shuffle. And I also have experience with him because he came out with a movie called Meteor Man. I had did the comic book adaptation. They wanted me to draw the comic book adaptation at Marvel of his film. So I actually drew the comic book adaptation of his film, and I was a kid. Yeah. And that's my – and I met him and everything. She was cool. And hold on one second. And an awesome director as I got to know him more, and he's done so many things even up till now. He produced so many films, so many series, and he's basically a household name. We're friends on Facebook and all that stuff too, so he's really an amazing director and also actor as well. He started also as an actor, which most, I guess, directors in Hollywood start off as, and I think his, I mean, do you know which films are, which one of his films is your favorite?
Probably the
I have to say Hollywood Shuffle. The Five Heartbeats is really good too, but Hollywood Shuffle came out of nowhere. The basic thing is that basically bitch slapped you to give you attention, make you pay attention to what he's saying in it. And the beauty of that film is he uses comedy to really focus on the inequity of being a black actor in Hollywood at the time. So the message is really pointed, and the comedy is laugh out loud, but still you get the point.
You get the point. Yes.
I mean, that was a great film. I also have to give a shout out. He has a very small part in one of my favorite films, and that's Streets of Fire. And that was the film, because he's part of a doo-wop group. That's the film that made him want to do the Five Heartbeats.
Oh, that's what he's inspired to do a film with that. Okay.
Mm-hmm. And also, Robert, you're friends with him on Facebook. I want him on the podcast. I'll friend him. I'll let him know.
I didn't say a word. I mean, I don't know if we're friends like that, but I'll definitely ask him. And
I'll tell him I know you. Okay, and that you've been on the podcast. I'll get in touch with him. I'll do it. But I'm going to use your name. I'll tell you that.
But he probably has like a billion people. He probably even forgot. Like, I see his stuff on. Yeah, do it. See what happens. I'll put in the word. Maybe he sees
That's
my
what
post
I always
and all that
do.
Stuff.
I always, tried to get people. I've tried to get Bill Duke on, too. And I haven't been able to yet, but I don't stop trying.
Wow. That'll be cool. But, yeah, he's of course, one of my favorites because of I've actually worked on one of his films as far as which is, you know what? Meteor Man was like one of the first superhero black superheroes in a film.
Absolutely.
As a film. So so he started off, you know, Marvel need to give thanks to him. And Blade, I think, came right after him. A little bit after him. But it's good to know that I had something to do with that.
Absolutely. You should be very proud of that. So, Cameron, one more from you, and then what I'm going to do is just talk about a couple of people we haven't talked about. Some of the okay, so go ahead. One more from you.
One more. I mentioned him earlier, Clark Johnson.
Oh, okay.
Clark Johnson?
Played Detective Lewis on Homicide, which he later became a director on. From there, you've seen his work, The Wire, The Shield, Your Honor. And
oh, wow.
Movies like SWAT and The Sentinel. And so he's just kind of become that guy to just do all kinds of character crime dramas. And hearing him in interviews, he's just very passionate about just making just suspenseful material. And I think he's earned it, unlike other people who just seem to, you know, just stay in one corner or just keep getting hired by the same producer over and over again, you know, instead of just working outside their comfort zone. But yeah, you look at his handheld style, and when he was even filming The Shield, you know, it's just fascinating to hear him talk about it. It's like, hey, I didn't think we had an actor who could do a villainous, you know, crooked cop performance. And he even had so many other, like, keywords and phrases. One of them was shoot the dog, which was his way of follow the dog with your handheld camera, you know, out and about. And he would even joke to people who were just like, hey, that looks like you shot it on an actual, you know, low-budget cameras out in the middle of L.A. He's like, we did. We were running and gunning. We were going about doing a pilot. We had to pay a few of the main stars of the show as extras because it was that, you know, limited a pilot. They almost didn't pick it up because how dare you have a show on regular cable that's about a villain as the protagonist, you know?
I'm looking at him now.
And anytime he shows up, it's just very cool to see him because he can do humor, he can do drama still. He's just always staying busy and always pretty key. I mean, he even appeared recently on Homeland, which he helmed a bunch of episodes of, and he was just great. He was just one episode as a CIA interrogator, and he just totally stole the show. So he's a beast, and just both sides of the aisle. It's great.
Yeah, he does a lot of homicides and crime stuff, which is, I guess that's his interest. I'm just looking at it. I'm sorry. I'm looking at his IMDb right now.
Yeah.
Well, you know, he's someone I'll have to check out, too. I mean, I probably have seen his work, but I don't know it that well. You know, because it's basically episodic TV. But I'll check him out. I want to just take a couple of minutes, and we've been talking about a bunch of newer directors and that sort of thing, getting their foothold in the industry. I want to, you know, when we began this, I talked about Oscar Michaud. I also need to mention three very, very important directors. We've already talked about some of their films, actually. And the first one would be Melvin Van Peebles. And if you've never seen Sweet Sweetback's Badass song, it's necessary. Right. I'm using that word a lot. It's necessary. Also, I love Melvin Van Peebles. My favorite film of his is Watermelon Man. Basically, it's a white man who basically is turned black and has to deal with how people treat him and so on and so forth. And
oh, wow.
So they wanted a white actor to go into blackface. Okay, with this. Nolan Ben Peebles says no. No.
Right.
So what does he do? He gets Godfrey Cambridge to come in and whiteface. And Godfrey Cambridge was so good, he convinced the people that he was white and started taking off his makeup. And they looked at Melvin and they said, okay, you win. And so it was Godfrey Cambridge that did it in whiteface at the beginning.
Oh,
and
wow.
The beauty of it is at the end of the movie, he decides not to go back to white.
He decides not to go back. He wants to stay black. Oh, okay.
And imagine the message there. And you can bet that movie bombed because it did.
Right. What? Yeah. I can imagine.
Okay.
But
another
it's a genius,
person.
It sounds like a genius movie.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it is. It is. Melvin Van Peebles, check out everything he did. And the other thing, too, is if you want a film, his son directed a film
Mario.
Called Badass, which is, Mario.
Yep.
Which is basically a film about the making of Sweet Sweetback. And you want to watch that also. Now, another person we need to mention very briefly is Gordon Parks Jr. And of course, that would be Shaft. That would be Superfly. That would be numerous other films. The man was the person who really codified what we call blaxploitation. Melvin Van Peebles came out a little earlier than that. Actually, Melvin had done a film in the 60s called The Story of a Three-Day Pass with Ivan Dixon, by the way, in the lead.
Nice.
But Gordon Parks absolutely codified what the blaxploitation film was. But then somebody else comes around, and his name is Michael Schultz. Do you know who he is and what he directed? Because we mentioned the film to Schultz. S-C-H-U-L-T-Z.
That sounds Jewish.
He's African Jewish.
Uh-huh. Okay.
He directed Car Wash.
He also
directed Coolie High, which is one of the great... It's they called it at the time the Black American Graffiti. He did several films, but Michael Schultz is a great African American director too, and you want to check him out.
I got to check him out. He did Blackish. He directed some episodes of Blackish, like you said. Wow, he has a long record, of course.
Oh, absolutely.
Wow.
I know him specifically from the 70s. And he did a lot of non-black films, too.
Yep.
Yeah. Honey Baby, Honey Baby.
Yeah.
He did the Rockford Files, Beretta. He starts
to
the
Number of Arrows. He's been around forever.
Wow. Is he still alive?
Oh, yeah. And get this, guys. He did The Last Dragon. He did Crush Groove.
Oh, Last Dragon, my favorite movie.
That's Michael Schultz. That's Michael Schultz.
He directed. All I hear is Barry Gordy. The Last Dragon.
He directed
Barry
Gordy. He did Grease Lightning. He did a couple of did Grease Lightning and Which Way Is Up, a couple of Richard Pryor films.
Wow. Wow, that's pretty cool. I had no idea. Like, I've never really looked at who did The Last Dragon, but I love it. I wish they would do a remake of The Last Dragon. That would be my goal as a director, too, is one of my film goals would be to redirect The Last Dragon.
I'm all for it, man. Make it happen.
Yeah. I know. We'll see. We will see. Let's see how it goes.
So, guys, I'm gonna go one more time with the two of you and just, do a final little, wrap up. Also, give yourself some plugs as we do this. So, we'll start with you, Robert. Give us your plugs again and just a final little wrap up on Black Directors.
Okay, let me see. The Black Director, another Black Director that needs to be mentioned. I had it on my mind. What was it? I'm trying to get off the females. I can't help but mention her. Issa Rae. You know who she is?
Yeah. Not offhand.
Yeah. She's the very contemporary, prolific director that is very well circulated in Hollywood right now. And I looked at her HBO show. I was a constant fan of her HBO show, and it's called Insecure. I don't know if you ever heard of it before.
No, I haven't. That helps.
It's African American television series, and it's pretty popular on HBO. And this season was her last season, but she's starting to get well rounded in. Well-known in Hollywood, and she started to get a lot of work in Hollywood. And she started out just doing a YouTube series called The Awkward Strange Black Girl or something like that.
Okay.
And then I guess the film producers saw her series on YouTube, and then HBO offered to give her her own show for their new lineup for HBO, and she created this series called Insecure. And so from there, now she produced other shows before and worked on things like Words with Girls and a Black Lady Sketch Show, which was another series. But I think now she's going to get other shows, television series, and HBO is working closely with her on so many other projects. She's working in other films in Hollywood, and she's writing. She's an amazing up-and-coming director in Hollywood that we need to look at as well. If you watch an episode of Insecure, you could see she has a definite style of way. She's very a good writer in as far as the writing about stories from a African American woman's perspective in America and dating and relationships and how it is to be a single African American woman in America and all of that, and it's very comedic as well as very endearing if you see her style of writing, and it's pretty cool.
Good. Good. And one more from you, Cameron, or a last little blurb, either on a director or just an overview?
Okay. Are you guys familiar with Kevin Hooks?
Oh, yeah. I know who Kevin Hooks is.
So there you go. Yeah. It did a lot of blockbusters like Black Dog and Passenger 57, then helmed a bunch of blockbuster shows for Stephen Bochco, and then after doing that, went on to other shows such as Prison Break, 24, and Last Resort. And, yeah, his father was Robert Hooks, and like him, he started out as an actor, and they both got into directing and producing, and he did a Nelson Mandela epic with Lawrence Fishburne, and, yeah, he's just constantly busy, and you just know that when he gets something on, he's going to have a pretty talented cast and a pretty thrilling premise. So.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. I'm familiar with his work. And everything, stuff like that. Of course, he's more of a contemporary director, so I definitely seen a lot of his stuff. So like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and The Punisher and stuff like that, which is cool.
And they give him multiple episodes.
And probably best known for Passenger 57 as a film and Black Dog, but doing a lot of TV these days too. And, of course, and all these streaming services, it's great stuff. And he did at least two or three episodes of Preacher, too, which I really like as a TV series. So
yeah,
at this point, what we're going to do – okay, I'm sorry. Finish up. I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Well, I'm basically going to wrap up here. So if you got something else to say, do it now.
Oh, okay. As far as, this is Robert Walker, and I'm a filmmaker myself. I created my first film. It's a short, but it's a biopic, and it's sort of like a biopic, and it's a narrative. Film, and my first film is called Sketchy, and it's based on a serial killing that happened in the 70s and in the LGBT community in the San Francisco Bay Area, and I produced the film because I had a vision, and it's interesting to see as an artist and as a filmmaker, how you see filmmaking as an art. Instead, you know, because when you look at films, you don't think about the artistry of it. You just want to be engaged in the film, the life of the film. But I love directing and producing film, I found, just by producing my first film. And it's like an art itself because of I'm an artist at heart, and I come from visual arts. And to do filmmaking, I found that it's a definite another kind of visual art that I also enjoy and plan to do more of. And I also have up-and-coming films that I'm planning to produce as well. And, hopefully you will hear about those. And right now, as far as Sketchy is concerned, I'm submitting them now into film festivals, and because I think this story should be heard, because this story, and it's very original. It's not like any other produced black film-themed story, because there are a lot of stories out there that that you don't see just stereotypical movies told about African-Americans, which is like either slavery, drugs, crime. I mean, it has crime, but it's a totally different spin on just being a thug or being a jive turkey type of character. Just something that's different, I think, that hasn't been told in Hollywood. As far as the African-American presents, you know, there are different types of people, and African-Americans in America. And a lot of those aren't represented in Hollywood. And I don't think a lot of people heard about this story that the main character is African-American that represents a certain type of person that's out of the stereotype of what Hollywood presents. And so that's my goal as a director.
Yeah, I was just going to say, Robert, I actually have seen the film. We had you on the podcast about 3 or 4 months ago, and I got to say I was really impressed with it. And then I do suggest that our listeners, you know, get a chance to see it and so on and so forth. So the big question is it available to watch or, you know, it'll have to be after the festivals, I would take it.
And well, let's see how it goes through the festival because you know how festival rules are. They don't want the film to be broadcast before they show it.
Exactly.
Most of them don't do.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But we will when it's released, we'll get you on for sure. Cameron, why don't you do a little bit of your own, you know, tell us about your podcast and everything.
Well, we've had John on before, the Objective Review Show, or Carl on before. Again, the JRS podcast tackles film franchise. We've been getting into music history and just tackling different kinds of reviews, like even reviewing best kinds of foods by restaurant type. And it's just always a fun collaboration. So.
Good, good. And where can we listen to that?
Anywhere podcasts are available, Podbean, Anchor,
Spotify. There you go.
Yep.
Okay, and as far as what we're doing here on Deviant Legion, it's time for housekeeping. Okay, so this week has been very, very busy.
Awesome.
But tomorrow we're going to be doing Adam Parenz is going to be at the Cathode Ray Mission. And, of course, it's right near Valentine's Day, so we're going to do romantic films and television, and I will be on that podcast, and I will guarantee you that everything I pick will be weird. It will not be normal. I'm just saying. I'm not a huge rom-com fan, okay? A very good friend of mine made me watch Made in Manhattan. I thought I was going to die and wanted to shoot myself afterwards. So I could guarantee you that. Now, next week, starting on Monday, we are booked for Monday through Friday again. And actually, we'll book Saturday and Sunday, too, but I'm only going to go to Friday. So Monday, we have Limes Marshall back with us, and we're going to be doing a tribute to Douglas Trumbull, who just passed away. Douglas Trumbull, if you don't know, is a visionary special effects person. He worked on 2001. Mm-hmm. He worked on so many films, directed Silent Running and Brain Scan, worked on The Tree of Life with Terrence Malick. Actually, the last film he did was The Man Who Killed Hitler and then Bigfoot, so which is actually a really good film, by the way. But we're going to be doing that on Tuesday. John Killian and Sean Borrega are going to be back with us. And we're going to be doing a commentary watch on my pick for blaxploitation film. And we're going to be doing a very odd little film called Top of the Heap. And think of a film about a black policeman in the 70s who's partnered with a white guy in Washington, D.C., having family troubles at home, having, of course, not being treated well by either the blacks in his neighborhood or his fellow policemen. And so what he does is he does a Walter Mitty, and dreams that he's an astronaut. It's a very odd film, but it is a really good one. And it's directed by a gentleman by the name of Christopher St. John. It's called It's called Top of the Heap. Top of the Heap. It's available on Amazon for like $1.99 to rent. It's also available on Tubi for free with ads. So you can check it out. On Wednesday, Vicki Love is back with us, with me, actually. And this will be the second episode of our show, Intent. And what that is I love sinus, by the way. It's intent. And what we do is we take a specific artist of any type or a specific film genre, and what is the intent of the filmmakers? Why are they making this? Why did they do this? And what is their message? And Vicki and I have known each other for a number of years, and we're generally at opposite ends of the spectrum when we start talking to each other. So it's very lively. And this Wednesday, we're going to be doing a show on slasher films of the 80s.
Cool.
So that's what we're doing. Then on Thursday, we have Tim Wickens is going to be with us, and hopefully somebody else. And Robert, if you want to come in on this one, you're more than welcome, because we're going to be doing a podcast on black actors and actresses, and particularly lesser known ones, ones that we want to focus on their work. So we're going to be doing that on Thursday, and then next Friday on the 18th, Adam is back with Cathode Ray Mission, and they're going to be doing the films of John Ford. So that's what we have for next week. We also, during the month, we're going to have a gentleman come in, and his name escapes me right now. Excuse me. I haven't set it up in the studio yet. But we're going to be talking about it's Rick Coleman, and we're going to be talking about Dixieland and New Orleans music. He wrote a book specifically, a bio on Fats Waller. He's also doing a book on the music of New Orleans. So we're going to be doing that. We also have our music programs that we do every 2 weeks, Down the Rachel Hole, Down the Rabbit Hole with Rachel. And we also, I'm going to be premiering a new music show. T.C. Clark, Tom Clark, is going to be doing an hour-long show of deep dives into music that you haven't heard for a number of years, and maybe some music you have. And he'll be premiering that on Sunday the 20th. So we are really booked for February. So just want you all to know.
Wow.
And that's what we've got.
That's a mouthful.
Yeah, that is very full. And I'm doing shows on other networks, too. So God knows I need to clone myself. Folks, listen. God knows what that would turn out like. So Robert, Cameron, as always, thank you very much for being on. I want to also
thank you for the opportunity.
Let you know that you're always welcome back, you know, and particularly you, Robert, this month. If you've got anything else, you know, I'll make sure that you know that we're going to be doing like actors and that still. And so if you want to pop in on that, you're more than welcome, my friend. All right.
Oh, thank you so much. I will be so honored. Thank you so much, and it's nice to meet you, Cameron.
Likewise, nice to meet you too. You got a better background.
All right. So, folks, we're going to call this a night. And so let's all say
all right.
Good night, everyone.
Good night.
Sweet dreams.
Don't let the bed bugs bite. Good night, folks. Take care, guys.